Landscapers who have an annual strategic plan are making 69% more profit per year. That's why I'm going to be hosting a free strategic planning web class to teach you how to put your vision on paper using our tried and tested template, how to set goals that your team is actually going to buy into and hit, and how to set monthly and quarterly benchmarks to keep everything on track. Look, 2025 may have been a bit of a slog, but 2026, it doesn't have to be. So register in the link in the description before space runs out, and I'll see you there. Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Building systems in your business is arguably one of the most impactful things that you could do as a contractor. But it's also one of the most time-consuming, onerous, and not always a visionary's favorite thing to do. In today's episode, we're going to break down how to create systems and processes faster by investing in a single role. And it's not an ops manager, it's not a COO, and it's not necessarily even an integrator. We're talking today about the power of a systems champion. That's right, Systemology author David Jennings is back to talk us through this concept in his new book, Systems Champion. In our conversation, we're going to be covering what a systems champion actually is and who would be the right fit for this role. The answer might surprise you. How to create and fill this role within your business, and how the rise of AI is making this role even more important with every passing year. If you love business systems as much as me and David do, make sure you subscribe or follow for content like this every single week. Now let's dive in with David Jennings. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Mr. David Jennings, welcome back to the show. You've got a new book. You've got a whole bunch more to talk about. Thanks for coming back on, my friend.
An absolute pleasure to be here.
We've got a whole nother paradigm we're going to look at. Before we talked about systemizing your organization, now we're going to talk about bringing in a systems champion for your organization, which I hear from a ton of our members. So I'm stoked to get into it. But I guess I think the last time we had you on was early 2025. It's been just over half a year now. Curious to know in your world, what's been going on since we last chatted?
We started the year with a real clear vision of just three big rocks. So we've knocked two of them down with one to go. So we rebuilt some software that we work with just to store SOPs. We launched the book mid-year, and then we've got a live event here in Melbourne in October. So it's been hectic, but it's awesome seeing a plan come together.
Just like the rest of us, man. We've been running around with too much going on. So that's good. You finished the book. So Systems Champion was the addition from Systemology, I guess. What inspired you to write this?
This one really was everything that I learned from working with hundreds of clients directly, probably thousands indirectly, to roll out Systemology, and a bunch of coaches and consultants who work with the businesses as well, and getting the feedback and kind of going, what are the leverage points? Where are people getting stuck? Why are they having trouble putting systems in place? How has AI completely changed the game? So I kind of took a step back and really realized, of everything that I've come across, the biggest leverage point, the difference between those that really make systemization work versus those that don't, they all had this common element, this idea of a systems champion, someone in the organization who takes responsibility for building up systems culture. And the book is written for them. So there's a little bit of an intro at the start for the business owner, but it's more of a playbook that you give to that team member that says, here, this is your job. This is what I want you to do.
I have seen this time and time again with our members. We bring them in and they're often more visionary, aspirational minds that can't focus and can't stay focused for as long as we need them to implement a lot of the program we have. And the saving grace is what we call an implementer, or we're going to get into it later, but you call a systems champion. And when I see that person sitting on the other side of the Zoom call, I'm like, I think we're going to be okay. I think we're going to be okay. And when we don't have it, it's a massive uphill battle. And you're saying you see this too, eh? This is like prevalent, I guess, amongst entrepreneurs across the board.
Yeah. Very common that the business owner has a picture in their head of what it is that they want the business to look like, but then bringing that into reality is very hard for them. Oftentimes because they start off on the tools, they're the technician, they know how to do the thing. And then they build a picture in their head of the business and the way that it works but it's with them in it. And that's all they know. That's the only picture they have in their brain. So it makes it very hard for them to build a business and get the picture right without them in it, where they're separate from the business and the business runs independently of them. So it's very common for them to struggle at this just because they can't get the picture right in their head of what they're trying to build.
Hey guys, quick question before we continue the episode. If you could get a custom roadmap for growing your business in 5 minutes, would it be worth your time? After tracking the growth of over 1,900 contracting businesses since 2015, we've put together a 5-minute quiz you can go take right now that draws on a massive pool of data. You'll get instant access to a personalized report that's going to tell you which one of the four phases of contractor growth you're actually in right now. How your company stacks up in the 6 core areas of business compared with industry benchmarks. And what to go do next, including customized resources, tools, and templates you'll have access to right away. No waiting around for an email or filling out a million separate forms. The link is in the description, so go check it out. Now, back to the episode. I see members go, some of them figure this out alone, some of them don't. Is it fair to say that, like, if you are a visionary-minded person, it's the odds are stacked against you to actually systemize your business completely alone? Because I'm one myself. Like, I struggle with this a lot. And I sometimes even question myself, am I being stubborn by just saying I can't do this? Or is that true? And at what degree does it become true? Or what degree should I just roll up my sleeves and get this done myself versus hire someone to help me with this?
I realized after I did a little project with Michael Gerber, who wrote the book called The E-Myth, and by many consider him kind of like the godfather of small business systems. And working closely with him was a big realization when I realized he's not a systems guy. He doesn't write process. He's not really great at process, but he's figured out how important it is. He's a visionary. He creates in his mind and then brings it into reality. And then he surrounds himself with team members that are great with process. So it's very common for, especially in the trades-based businesses, for the business owner, that visionary, the person who gets the big business going, to not be a systems person. And that's okay. As long as you kind of realize that systems are important, you can't grow a business without them, at least build the dream business that you want, that gives you the freedom you want without them. And if you're not great at them, then you need to make sure that you surround yourself with people who are great at them. So that's generally the first message I give to a business owner when they are about to make the leap. And sometimes down the road, when they do manage to get the business working without them, then some business owners do come back around and start to go to work on the systems again, because they have space and they're literally working on the business, not in the business. But it's at the start, when you're working in the business and you're not even a systems person and you don't really like it, then really you should probably try and avoid
the
it.
The deck's stacked against you a bit. Yeah, I've seen both. And that's why I always wonder, and it's sometimes in this world, we give the visionary too much of a break and we just say, it's all good. Just like go get someone else to go do it. And it creates an element of laziness. And I'll even say that's being created in me a bit, because my business partner is one of the greatest system champions I've ever met in my life. And I've left so much up to him. It's created almost like a weak left arm, if that kind of makes sense. Like my right arm is, I always use what I'm great at. I should use a little bit of what I'm not good at, but to a certain extent. And it's interesting you bring up Michael Gerber.
I'll add one thing about Gerber, because he gave me one other bit of advice. Like, he gave me all of these nuggets that really have influenced my work. The other one he said, and this was after he read the Systemology book, he said, I love what you've done here, but you need to give the message to business owners to not let them off the hook. He said, you do make it sound like in Systemology that, you know, just leave it to the systems champion and step away and let your team do it. And then he said, the key is here, the business owner needs to lead it. So that means they need to be behind it. They need to understand it. They need to support it. They have to give it time, money, and resources. They don't necessarily have to hop in there and document the process, but unless the business owner is leading this, this will fail. So they've got to get behind it.
It's fair to say they're in charge of how can we do this. It's not that you can or you cannot do this. It's that you need to figure out how, and how you navigate this is up to you. But to just say it can't be done because I don't do it is not going to work. To say I can do it stubbornly and completely ignore what you're not great at is also potentially going to lead into a lot of pain. But to be aware of how you can is probably a great place to start for questions for yourself. If you're...
I mean, this is the master skill of business, really, when you think about it. We're talking about capturing best practice and making it repeatable so that it can be delegated to typically less skilled, lower cost, and sometimes even robot labor. So this is business. Understand, it's the fundamental building block. So if you want to be a business owner, this is part of the process.
Welcome. Welcome to the good parts and the hard parts. This, for some, this might be the hard part. Before we get too far ahead of ourselves, we should define this. What is a systems champion?
So the systems champion is the person who builds a systems culture inside an organization. And they work on a few key pillars. They get the documentation down. They make sure that the right tools are in place and you're never more than one click away from a process. And they build the culture, they get the team on board, they keep it front and center, and they constantly move it forward. Now, this role, it's someone's job. If you don't have a systems champion, then it's probably the business owner that's wearing that hat and they're doing a crap job at it. Sometimes it's an operations manager, and that's okay to get it started. They're usually going to be at least a bit more wired to it and have a greater affinity to it because they're operationally driven and they think in terms of process, especially in the trades-based businesses. That said, I think you can start there, but ideally, I think having a dedicated person with capacity. The issue sometimes when you're getting this off the ground, leaving it to the operations person, is they're busy with a truckload of other things. And sometimes getting in there and doing the documentation isn't necessarily the best use of their time. So you can go a little bit quicker sometimes by getting even a junior person into that role, and their job is just to extract and capture best practice. So, and we can explore a little bit more. I mean, there's a difference between first capturing what you're doing and making it repeatable versus re-engineering.
You had mentioned this when we were just getting prepped, but you had said, Danny, this is sometimes, not always, but sometimes different than what we would all know as like the integrator. What's different about this systems champion from being just a straight integrator of all systems in an organization?
The big thing with an integrator is they're kind of like your right hand man or woman, and they're really focusing on a whole range of different topics, managing the team. Sometimes they're getting clients that get escalated. They might be doing a bit of process. They're overseeing projects. They're talking to finance. They're like they're doing everything. They're just as busy as you are as the business owner, and they're very capable and very skilled. So oftentimes it doesn't leave much capacity to really get in there. And we have a tremendous opportunity right now with AI and making sure that we get our processes down, and then we have a look at, well, how can we get AI to do it faster, cheaper, better? And that on its own is a full-time job. So sometimes, you know, I often start with a junior apprentice tradesperson that's hungry and wants to learn more about the business. Oftentimes they know how to do the technical work, but they don't know how to run a business that delivers the technical work. And you pair them up with the strongest team members in your business to go, what is it you're doing? Let's extract that IP. Let's get it stored into a central database. And they might grow into an integrator or an operations manager following that path because they become some of the most knowledgeable people in the organization because they've worked with all of your best team members.
Right. So someone more junior, you're saying, not because there's some magical skill within them, it's because they have time. And having time and using time. Tools like ChatGPT actually might give them the back end brain they need to go and start building the things that need to be done in the organization and working with the right people.
Yeah. yes, they're, if you pick the right systems champion, they're curious, they might be a bit younger, so sometimes they're more comfortable with some of the tech, speaking exactly what you're saying to ChatGPT. Like, you want someone who embraces these tools, because a lot of what historically held people up when it came to systemization is things like the documentation and finding that there's some friction there. But if you get someone who's comfortable with tech and they realize, oh, I can record something on my iPhone, I can get the audio transcribed, I can upload that into ChatGPT and I can ask it to draft out the process. Just being comfortable with that workflow means that they can move incredibly quickly and they don't necessarily need the technical skills or the know-how that they might historically have needed. Like, AI is empowering these team members, whereas previously you might have had to have got a Six Sigma consultant in who, you know, is trained at the top level and probably charges like a wounded bull. But now we don't need that. Like, with a few guardrails and pointing the right junior in the right direction, they can become one of the most valuable team members because of the tools and they have the capacity to focus.
So I'd imagine, even thinking about it this way, like, it would lower the barrier to entry for somebody having this role in their organization. And I did have a question here when I first wrote this up, thinking about the size and complexity of an organization of when they could even afford this type of role. But given what you're saying, when is kind of the right time for a business to say, hey, let's get this role in place, or at least somebody into this role to help with these things?
I think once you're at 7 to 10 staff, somewhere in there is, and it doesn't need to be full time, but if you've got some subcontractors that you work with, you've got an admin person or two, you've maybe working with a marketing person, you got your finance person. Like, if you've just got a handful of people where the business owner is still the center cog, and oftentimes the systems champion for those more junior businesses can come before the operations manager, because it can be a big jump for a lot of business owners to think, I have to pony up with, you know, 150K or something like that to get someone great into that position. Well, maybe that's, you know, the business is not quite ready, but don't let that stop you from systemizing and getting things in place. So we can, and who knows, if you pick wisely, this junior might grow into that role, maybe, maybe not. At the very least, you start to get this base set, which means when it is time and you can afford an operations manager, they've got so much more to work with. They come in and go, wow, you've already got a rock solid foundation here.
Okay. That's good. Now, my next question kind of leads into this, and you can tell me which direction we should go in this, but I want to know what traits make somebody great for this role. And I do feel like we are talking about two roles right now. We're talking about a junior to get the ball rolling, and then we're talking about eventually like an ops manager or a COO. Is there a combination of traits between the two that's just like, we need that type of person to have this type of traits, or is one role very different than the other? Help me understand this.
I would start off focusing on the junior one, mainly because I've seen it work so well in trades-based businesses. I've seen it hundreds of times. There's a client of ours, Ryan Stannard. He runs a construction, like residential home building company in Adelaide, Australia. Their turnover about 10 mil. And his systems champion actually was his daughter. She came into the business, I think she's about 20 when she started. She came in as an interior designer, started documenting a bunch of the main interior designers' work. Then within about a month that the main interior designer left, she stepped into that role, systemized it fully out, and then really found, oh, I like this systemizing thing. You know, she was curious, she was tech savvy, adaptable, could meet team, like great communication skills, so she could meet people at different levels and feel comfortable to kind of talk to them, and great attention to detail. And then she started working around the organization. And over the course of 12 months, you know, she'd meet with the different department heads and, you know, people looking after things, and would extract some of the key systems and organize them all into System Hub, like a central location. And it got to a point where Ryan, her dad, ended up taking 6 weeks off over Christmas, which for a lot of tradespeople, like, I mean, if you take the time off, the money stops. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're not on the tools, you're not making money. So she stepped into the role and kind of oversaw things while he went away, and he's now grooming her to be that operations manager to run the business and have it function when he's not there, and he's now setting up a new business. So I've seen that many times now. So some of the qualities, like, I look at Erin, and I've now interviewed a bunch of different systems champions, and then I took the transcripts and I fed it into ChatGPT, and I said, tell me about all of the common elements that you can see amongst these systems champions. And it said, you know, organizational prowess and detail oriented, exceptional communication skills, naturally curious and problem solving, tech savvy and adaptable, got leadership potential. And these are the things that kind of just floated out of the conversations that I had with them.
Kind of like a organized leader. Is that kind of what we're talking about?
Yeah. And they might not, it might be leader potential. Mm-hmm. They might not even be there yet. It's just a young go-getter who's hungry, who wants to kind of do well in the organization and is naturally organized. Like, you don't want to push a square peg into a round hole. Find someone who already creates checklists and is organized, and that's just what they do.
But they've got a lot of ambition and they want to do more and they want to see what they're made of.
Yep.
Looking at, like, past experience, you'd mentioned interior design, but what are some industries or past jobs where you start to see some themes? If I'm looking at posting on a job ad, or even just looking through resumes, is there anything I could look for? Like, oh, they've worked here, or they've done this kind of role. And what are some jobs or past roles that would indicate this might be the right type of person?
For the real juniors, you don't necessarily need any specific traits or training from university or working in a particular role or job, or, like, I mean, I've seen it work where maybe you get a return to work mum or dad, and maybe they've worked in a larger organization, so they've already had exposure to process, and they might have even done some process as part of their previous role. I've seen people get that person to step into this role. But the one that we're talking about here, the junior, oftentimes they're just trained in the technical work, so that way you don't have to teach them the language, and they already kind of know a bit about how the business works and the work that's being done for the client. And then more, it's just those attributes that I'm talking about. So you try and uncover some of these in, I mean, there's a handful of ways you can make yourself a magnet for these type of people, where in your job ad, you might say, you know, we're a process-driven organization, and down in the footer, you say, here are two or three processes that will be part of your role. Because what that'll do is that'll repel away the people who process doesn't click with them and attract those in, where they're like, oh, yeah, this is interesting. And you say, this is the type of role that you would be doing. And same in the interview process. Like, you ask them, when was the last time you created a checklist? You know, tell me a little bit about, you know, do you create checklists for anything, for at home, for just day to day? Let them know that our company is committed to systems and processes, and this is a big part of your role. You know, what appeals to you about working in an organization like that? It's just having the discussion. Whereas I think a lot of business owners, like, I'd even be putting those things in just about all of your job ads, because then you find people that are going to fit in with your culture. Like, there's no debate that systems-driven businesses aren't better businesses. We know they are better businesses. And if you know, Mr. and Mrs. Business Owner listening to this right now, don't see yourself as a systems person, so surround yourself with systems-driven people. Hire systems-driven people. That's actually the secret. I remember hearing some advice someone said, to some famous business guru, what's the secret of motivating your staff? And he said, hire motivated staff. And I thought, what's the secret of getting people to follow systems? Hire systems-driven people.
I will say this from my own experience. I've noticed it's not necessarily an industry or even a specific job title, but people who have actually come from larger organizations that they've operated under these level of systems in the past and appreciated them, but want a better culture. They're like, the culture kind of was shitty. Or like, I want to be a part of the change. And I want to be able to feel like when I make change, I can actually see it happen and not just be a number in a giant organization. But they, you know, people have worked for Apple, people have worked for Amazon, people have worked for some of these large, very systems-driven organizations, have seen it and they get it. Now they want to go build their version of it in a small little petri dish like your company. That's where I've noticed a bit of a
theme. I love that. You've hit the nail on the head. As soon as you said that, I'm like, I've got instant pattern recognition in my head of where I've seen that. Mm. The first one that came to mind, there's an accountant in Mornington, a couple suburbs from me, and she's, we've done some great work together. She grew incredibly quickly. Sharon Schmidt from Smart Business Solutions, her original job was working at McDonald's. So she saw a vision for what a systemized business looks like, and then she's brought that in. Her systems champion is actually her son, Ryan, who equally was training to be a pilot before he came to work for an accounting business. And being a pilot, there's process and checklist and everything. So he's already pre-baked and programmed. So I think that's an astute insight from you there is, that someone who's already seen it, it makes it much easier because then you're just saying, let's recreate what you've already seen.
I mean, when you talk about the junior person, that is often the story. Is they're kind of like, I've seen it. I've been a part of it. I just want to build my version of it in a smaller, like, and they're excited to kind of get there. Like I've hired some like really good recruiters actually in the past who are like, I've been a part of this massive recruiting organization and I just want to build mine now. And I kind of get exactly what it should be. And your company, it isn't 5,000 people. It's 50 or it's 10. And then suddenly it's like, I get to now build something that's much more easy and quick to implement and malleable, but it gets to be my version. And they're very proud of that. You said like pride in what they're doing. That gives them a chance to kind of make their mark on an organization. I'll just rattle off a few others that you were just kind of mentioning, but precision is a fairly obvious one. Someone who's naturally attuned to seeing things in a precise way. Passion for the organization, passion for the industry. They have to have some sort of passion for the thing that they're building. And then you had briefly mentioned it, but like some sort of like leadership or the want to be able to be in front of others, the want to learn to be a good leader over time versus being like a brave heart leader. They're more of like, I want to be a part of something with people and I actually want to put myself out there to actually lead others. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
All things I've looked at in the past too. Cool. So that... anything else you want to comment on this? I'm trying to picture the person.
Yeah.
Does that help frame it? Is there anything else we should add?
Yeah, I think you want, and I suppose it's whenever you're hiring anybody, you want someone who wants this, and there's a level of drive, and you know, just there's a little bit of that sparkle, like. You want to get them early as well, so you can help to shape and mold them in your organization within that culture. I think learning to spot these people will be one of the most important skills you can do as a business owner. Like really, that's what you want to do. You want to learn to spot these and then do exactly what you're talking about. We're kind of talking about pattern recognition. I'm going through my databanks in my brain going, what are all of these criteria? What are the common elements? What can I see? And then that way in the real world, when you're in the moment, you go, when you see it, you go, oh, that's it. And then you lock that in early. I think developing that skill is probably one of the best things you can do as a business owner because it translates to a whole range of different things. It's just about finding the right people.
I think that's for almost every role in an organization, but I think this is one role specifically that unlocks the potential of an entrepreneur. I think if you only find other people that are like you, which a lot of us do because we're like, oh, this person reminds me so much of me when I was younger. It's like, no, it's like, probably someone that's a little different than you actually, but would really appreciate working with an opposite, you know, polar opposites, obviously in business. And in these instances often can do really well. And I've learned over 10 years, I'm like, my biggest ability to do well is find great people who are very different than me, but share a common set of core values.
So one way to help accelerate this you could also look at is, and the way that I did it, I ran a Kolbe test. I mean, there's a bunch of different personality tests out there. One's called Kolbe that I've used in the past, and I ran it on myself. And then I did run it on my ops manager, and I ran it on my systems champion. And the key difference between the two was me, I'm a quick start. I can get things up and running and off the ground. And the systems champion and the ops manager, my best ones, have high follow through. Right. So that's the way, the wording that they use, but its ability to take things through to completion is a real key part of this role.
So I'm interviewing somebody, I'm asking about the things they've achieved and done, but looking more for the follow through than the actual like thing they've started or how many things they've started. How did they finish? Yeah. Matters most. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get into a bit of the role itself. So when I'm looking at like their primary responsibilities or accountabilities, what is this person doing in their role and what are they doing every day? What does this look like?
So in the original Systemology book, I give this linear system, but building a business, as we know, isn't really linear, and it will depend on the organization and where the weak points are. And there are certain things that need to happen in a certain order. The way I talk about it in the new Systems Champion book is there are three areas they need to nail. And it's documentation, tools, and culture. So documentation is the how-to information. We want to remove the I didn't know how excuse. So that is meeting with team members that are great at something, capturing best practice, centrally storing that knowledge and organizing it. That's documentation. Tools is, it addresses the, I didn't know it was expected of me. So when I'm talking about tools, it's who does what by when. It's your project management or it's your jobs management platform. There's some performance management in there. It's how you're using your AI tools. There's a range of different things you can do underneath each of these pillars to strengthen each pillar. And then the last one is culture. And this is about how do we prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that we are a systems-driven business? How do we plant elements and celebrate system wins and talk about it on team meetings and give out awards for people who've followed or innovated on process? And what we're looking to do there, that also has a lot to do with, you know, your recruiting and your onboarding. I put that underneath culture because you get the right people in. And then how do you enforce when someone doesn't follow process? Like all of that fits under there, which helps to then address the, but I don't want to. So they're the three big excuses you've got to, the systems champion really needs to solve and work towards. I don't know how. I didn't know it was expected of me, and I don't want to. And we use these three pillars and a range of tools underneath each one to strengthen each of those pillars. And that's really the job of the systems champion.
Beautiful. So they've got three things to do. Get it written, make sure there's a way to access it and use it every single day, and get everybody stoked about it. Is that fair to say?
Easy. Okay. Yep, love it.
Okay. So within this, I'm now the owner and I've got this systems champion hired. They're starting to work on the documentation. They're starting to look at my project management software and how we can use the workflows, and they're starting to bring it into the culture so that we're all starting to use this thing. How do I coach them? Especially if this isn't my strength. How do I build and develop this person?
This is a hard one for me to answer without plugging a systems champion academy. So I recognize that the business owner is the worst person to be directing the systems champion on what to do because they don't know what it is that they want them to do. So effectively we've built a school for systems champions and it takes them through that process, either that or from your ops manager, but the business owner is usually not the right person. Or even, I write books that are useful and complete. Just give them the systems champion book and that alone, I mean, $20 on Amazon, that's enough. Like that'll get you so far. I write books where I see there are holes and things that are not met or addressed. So a systemology was written for the business owner to give them the system to systemize their business. Systems champion is written for this team member because I don't see this work out there in the real world. So that, yeah, that's a hard one for me to answer without, plugging the program.
But you should, right? Like, you've built a whole business and a life around this, which is fair. And I feel even when I look at Breakthrough Academy, I'm like, what are we doing? We're filling a massive hole where organizations that are too small to get large scale consulting need help building their organization. And they kind of suck at it naturally, right? And so they rent, we call it like renting like a COO's brain and using a coach and using a process to be able to get it across the line. You're doing the exact same thing, which I think is amazing. And there's nothing to hold up the book higher, man. It's like people need this. This industry needs this. And it's causing us more pain than good to not have some solution to it, because most businesses aren't big enough to afford, like you said, the $150,000 a year salary, which was interesting because when I prepped for this, I was like, we're going to talk about that person. But what you're giving me right now is a solution past that. Say, hey, you don't need to worry about that yet. And there's so many businesses that I talk to that cannot afford $150,000 a year overhead salary. That's barely what they're paying themselves. So this is valid, man. This is great.
Yeah.
Okay. So we shouldn't coach them. That's what you're saying, which is fine. Because we're too lopsided in how we think we're going to influence them and wreck their ability to be the best version of themselves. Is that fair to say?
Okay. Yeah. Yep. That's pretty much it.
Let's call it everybody listening then. That's fine. Good. Okay. So now we've got this person in, maybe we've got them some support so they can kind of learn from some external source. Potentially it's you. How do we actually give them the tools they need to create that change management in the company? How do we give them enough? Cause they, like you said, they could be a junior. So they're now telling somebody who's been around the company for 10 years, how to implement new processes and ideas, which can be a massive, uphill battle. How do you help them with, I guess you call it culture. How do you help them build the culture around this?
So this is one of the magical pixie dust that makes systemology unique from everything that's come before us. We focus on at the start for the systems champion as capturing what they're currently doing, not what they would like to be doing. So all we're doing is capturing best practice. So this junior, effectively, when they're meeting with those senior team members who know how to do things, it's the mentor-mentee relationship. And the mentor loves that. And then the mentee is effectively the systems champion. And extraordinary gains can be had in a business just by making things repeatable and removing key person dependency, not necessarily re-engineering the process. So we first start there. Just go, what are you doing? Let's make it repeatable so we can delegate it and pass it around and move from tribal knowledge to this is how we do things here. And then beyond that, AI has created a window for the systems champion now, because a lot of those senior team members aren't yet adapting to and comfortable with AI. And it just makes sense to them that a junior might have some insight there. And after they learn what the process in is being done, it's much easier for them to go, oh, did you know steps 2 and 3? I can write this template for you and we can do a custom GPT and we can feed it in here and it'll speed up your process for writing a proposal tenfold. And it's much more accepted at that level. It'd be very hard. We always see this where, some of the traditional methods, with Six Sigma and Lean, they'll get a consultant in, they'll rip up and start fresh and rewrite existing process. They'll give it to the team and then the team resists. They're like, you've just come out of nowhere. You don't really know the business. You don't know how it works. You don't know my job. And then you're going, this is the new process. That's not how you get organizational change.
Change management, I've noticed, even in our own organization, is one of the hardest parts of this whole thing that often almost gets left as like an afterthought. It's like the big work is in the build, right? And then we'll just get it in there. It'll just kind of like, it'll work. But it's like, no, that is actually the hardest part, is to get everybody to utilize this stuff and love this stuff. So you were just touching on AI, and I did have some questions on AI around this. You had mentioned by them being the first line of defense for AI to go and play with these tools and then represent that to the company and say, here's some good things you could trial and use. Can you just give us stories on this or examples of this? Like, how does a systems champion bring AI into an organization in a healthy way? What are some good examples of how this has happened?
So I touched on that lady before Shannon Schmidt, who runs the accounting practice, and her son Ryan. So they documented all of their processes, and Shannon had the experience at McDonald's, so she kind of get it. She gave Ryan the space, time, money, capacity to work on this because she valued the systems. He gets it all documented. Now, Shannon is a smart operator. She spotted AI early and saw this as a huge opportunity and move. She ended up initially working with an AI consultant where the systems champion was basically feeding them, here's the process, here's what we're doing here, can you help me re-engineer this? And one of the early processes she did, she had an offshore assistant that was logging into the Australian Tax Office portal, which is our tax office here, every single week for every single client to scan and see, are there any news updates from the ATO that need to be fed through to the client? And then they would make that decision, collate it, write an email and send it to the client. They had this all documented very well because it was offshored, so it needed to be very meticulous. They went to the AI guy that they worked with. He built a little robot using some AI and some automation stuff, logged into the portal, did the scan, fed it into a spreadsheet, using AI, drafted the email, left it for human in the loop, someone to review it right at the end, and then would hit send. Basically went from 900 hours over the course of the year for this task down to like a tenth of that. And that was just one of many processes she did. Now, that's probably one of the first ones where she got the consultant, but now she's trained. The systems champion worked alongside the AI consultant, learnt what they did, understood the thinking of the process, and now was able to start to re-engineer a bunch of their own processes. So it's sometimes that's a great way as well. Like, you work with a consultant, you learn how it's done, you internalize that skill and capability, and then you run with it. And systems and AI are two skills you want internal. You don't want external.
There's one thing I'm noticing is coming a theme probably in the last 2 or 3 months, which is the ability to connect your own personal data to a ChatGPT is the one I use all the time, but you can do it with Google as well. And actually specifically Google Drive, the ability to just essentially hook up everything you have saved in Google Drive or Dropbox and use that data for creating new systems, for giving new insights, for helping us make strategic decisions. Have you seen an example of this where they've created, we call it like a data lake, basically like an internal company data is synthesized and is categorized so that the rest of the company can actually start to self-create its systems. Have you seen this before? Mm.
So the way that we teach our systems champions to do it, there's a couple of ways. Firstly, you want to be careful what feeding everything into AI, but building little manuals that have certain key information in it that you might then feed into certain custom GPTs or a Gemini Gem could be things like your ideal client profile, a little bit about your products, a little bit about your business, your sales process. You feed enough of the information to give the AI the context, and then the output can be significantly improved. And there are different tools for different outcomes. Like, again, we've gone all in just recently on Google. And for a little while there, we were kind of spread across a bunch of different tools. And then I just realized they have access to all of our data. They've already got privacy, security, everything all handled. So started training up our team on, they've got Gemini Gems, which is like ChatGPT custom GPTs. They're about to launch a new product called Opal. It's in the US, but not here in Australia yet, which is like a workflow management system. Gemini is included in all of their tools. We've flipped over now to Google Chat and using Google Meet and recording our calls. And it's all getting, you know, they have access to all of this data, and the speed at which they're innovating and introducing different things, we will get to a point where it's recording every meeting that it's having in our organization. It's saving it into a folder And then the AI has access to that. So it has ultimate visibility on what's going on inside the business. And then that can be used to train the AI to give you insights. It's going to know more about your business than you do. Now, we're already in Google. So I'm like, well, okay, well, let's go all in on there. Maybe I'd be a bit more hesitant feeding all of this sort of stuff into ChatGPT, but I'm like, they've got much stricter rules around privacy. So that's at least the way we're approaching it.
You know, as we're talking, I'm just thinking about one other trait for the systems champion, and it should be somebody that loves to play with AI. It likely should be, because if you're talking about a young person who's going to make a big splash in an organization with not enough knowledge, but access to the smartest brain on the planet, the craziest invention we've created in human history, they probably should have some experience or background or interest in exploring that element, so that they can bring that to the organization and basically give themselves a superpower from day one.
Yeah. When I was trying to pick the title for the book, the working title for a little while was actually Systems and AI Champion. Mm-hmm. And in the book, there's a few chapters in here. I call them the Systems and AI Champion. And then I realized, because I'm like, I always try and write something and think, how is this going to be relevant in 5-10 years' time? And the way I see AI now is AI will ultimately be like electricity or the internet. So these days we don't go, this is an iPad now with electricity, or this is an iPad now with the internet. It's just in there, and AI will be the same. So AI is going to be in everything, all devices, all machines, all everything. So right now I think that if you recognize that and this trend, I think you're exactly right. Hire someone who loves and understands AI, because this, again, quite possibly will be one of the most important roles in the organization. The adoption of this is so critical, because it's going to be in everything.
How long do you think we have? So there's companies that are listening right now that have like, yeah, I've got a ChatGPT account, but that's about it. And they just use it to like ask random questions. How long do we have as a small business, let's call it $1 to $10 million a year right now in trades, which, you know, we are protected from, like, I think it'll take us 10 to 15 years to get the labor force replaced, right? But I think for the information side of this to be competitive in our marketplace, how long do we have?
Initially, and the way I open the story in the Systems Champion book, I have a fear in me, and that's got me to move faster than I've ever moved before, because when ChatGPT came out, I instantly saw, I was like, this is going to kill about a third of my business. I had a part of our business where our systemologists would meet with clients, record someone doing a task, send us the recordings. We would document it for them, save it into the accounts, and then they would send it back to their clients. I saw ChatGPT and I thought, well, this is going to kill that business. What do I do? And then I was like, well, I'm going to have to show this to the systemologist. Like, they're going to find out anyway. So, I shared it with them, and literally within about 60 days, a third of my business disappeared. I had a team of just close to 10 team members that were doing this documentation full time. And then the business dried up like that. And then over the course of the next year, I tried to replace some of these team members, and as in put them in different locations. But I slowly started to have to let go of team members because we're very clearly overstaffed. And I ended up basically letting go of a bunch of team members. And it got me to just sit there and rethink, what am I doing? What else is going to change in my business? Are there other areas I need to be concerned about? Fortunately, I've doubled down on systems, because I know that regardless of what happens with AI, systems are still going to be relevant and process, because the machines need to be told what to do. Systems and processes are just programming for the machines. So you need to get very clear on what these processes are. So as I'm going through all of this thinking, and then I'm thinking, how long do we have? Like, I was right on the front line. I was hit like that. That's what's got me to go, oh, I've got to start moving now, because you know, I got hit within, you know, 60 days of this launching. But there are different roles that are getting hit at different times. Things are moving a bit slower. I mean, it's moving quicker than anything I've ever seen. And you look at someone like Elon, and he's coming out with his robots, and they're talking about these humanoid bots, which, I mean, at some point they are going to be building houses. I mean, that's why he's building them. He's building them because he wants to send them up to Mars before the humans get there, have them build everything. So by the time we get there, everything's done. So he's, that's what he's building.
Have you ever heard of the company Boxable? I don't know if you've heard of them. They're in the United States. A company called Boxable. I've been to their factory. Elon's invested in it, but it's prefabbed homes on a mass scale. They're in the desert in Las Vegas. Yeah. And there's disruptors coming even for this contracting space. And I think everybody feels a little bit protected because it's going to be hard to replace a plumber, is kind of like what everybody says, which I agree. But there's elements, like you just said, there's little pieces that every year, 6 months, are going to change in how we operate. Is there any insight for the contractors, for those listening? It's like, or just even advice for things they should be focused on for this 2025, 2026 year?
You need to make a move on this now, and you need to make this a priority now. So I think you can start off thinking about a lot of the administrative tasks. That's really easy, low-hanging fruit stuff. And getting very clear on your process, because in a world where AI can do just about anything, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. The people who are winning with AI are laser-focused on their core tasks and what's important in their business, and they're doing, and then all they're doing is they're asking the question, how can AI help me do what I'm already doing faster, cheaper, and better? That's how you win with AI. Don't chase shiny objects. Don't get distracted. Just say, what are my core things? And let's now do it for a tenth of the price. And you slowly and systematically chip away at those, and that's where you get the extraordinary gains.
I think there's something to be said about the creativity and the thoughtfulness and the experience of the entrepreneur joined with a junior, like we just saw, systems champion that can help with the implementation and the work through of a lot of this. And the third variable being AI itself to help supercharge the whole process. Is that when I just look at our whole talk today, I'm kind of thinking about those three variables and saying, like, let's put those three together. And right now it's a lot of time the entrepreneur and this crazy tool called AI. It's like, just add a systems champion to help you move this a lot, like, forward in a much more effective, efficient way at a lower cost option than a massive operations manager. Like, we're talking about someone junior, yes, that can just work and help move this stuff forward.
To get it done. That's right. Look, the other skill and why the visionary is so important in this piece is because AI is best when you know what it is you want to ask it, and you ask good quality questions. For a little period there, I thought when it first happened, I was like, oh, wow, this is just going to make all of our junior people, you know, really, really skilled and be able to operate at this top level. But they don't know what great looks like, and they don't know how to ask the questions and iterate, because AI is great at just, you know, delivering something with confidence, and then someone who doesn't know any better blindly accepts it. So it's actually a great magnifier for really skilled, high-level visionaries who can ask the right question, because then they go, oh, that's not right, tweak it. Oh, no, okay, let's readjust. It's not necessarily bringing up this lower level. So it is. It's the unison of visionary, junior who can help get it done, because the visionary oftentimes is so time poor, they don't have the space to do this, and the AI, that three together, there's a sweet spot right in the middle that is unique to right now. There's never been a better time to systemize and build a business than right now. There's never been more opportunity and more potential than right now for those who move quickly and take advantage of this first mover advantage, because this window will close. There are tradespeople listening to this who won't take action. There are tradespeople who aren't even listening to this and not even thinking about this, and that they will move slower. I think there's a tremendous opportunity for the person listening to this right now.
Amazing. David, this is good. This turned into a much more advanced AI chat than I thought we were going to get into, but I get it. And I get why we're here with this. So any final thoughts, just as, when you look at all of this, just final, like, I guess, advice, words of wisdom, anything else you just encourage everybody listening to, what would be their first step, their first thoughts? What should we leave doing from this podcast?
Just get started. I think about Shannon and that accountant I talked about a little bit earlier. She just got started. She listened to a couple of webinars, watched a few extra videos, shared it with her team, raised the discussion. This is not going to happen overnight in your business. So you just know that this is a huge trend. Start walking in that direction. Read a little bit, watch a little bit, get your team on board, find people in your business who naturally gravitate toward this. Don't try and push people who are sitting on the sidelines who, you know, don't want to embrace process or AI. Start with those who just get up and naturally do it, and they're the easy ones to work with. Then the other people can watch, oh, okay, there's a movement here, and they're either going to get on board or they're not. Give them every opportunity to get on board, and then if they don't adjust, then maybe they're not the right fit for the direction on where you're headed. But you just have to start. There's a lag time between listening to this right now and getting your business to the level that you want it to be. So you just have to start thinking about it and taking those first steps.
Yeah. And I'm going to say too, thank you for being vulnerable on this podcast. I think there's a lot of entrepreneurs that maybe haven't fully felt or fearful or unsure of the impact of AI in their business. And thank you just for being real about it and speaking to it. And I think if there's one lesson that even comes out of it is don't wait until it hits. Get ahead of it so that when it does hit, you're already sailing on that ship. So thank you for saying that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, pleasure.
Okay, David. Well, thank you for your thoughts. We have your book. I guess we'll put maybe a link in the description. If people want to reach out to you, what should we put down there for people to connect with you? What's the best way for people to reach out?
Yeah, if you just go to systemschampion.com. In there, there's links to LinkedIn and our YouTube channel. And I mean, the best place to start is Amazon and get the book, have a little bit of a read. If you're a business owner, maybe start with Systemology just to kind of get your head around it and then move into Systems Champion. I think that's probably the best place to start.
Awesome. Okay. Well, have a good rest of your week, my friend. And for everyone listening, let's go rock and roll. Let's go figure out some of this stuff. Okay. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.